Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom.
We have a fantastic show for you this week. We've got some headlines for you, followed by a conversation with a representative from CAL FIRE about fire risk in Fresno County, and then we'll close with what we're loving this week.
So we're going to start this podcast with some headlines. Donnie, what's going on in Fresno this past week?
Yeah, so we are still talking about the reverberations of the immigration raids that the Border Patrol carried out in Bakersfield, the greater Bakersfield area, about 2 weeks ago. Juliana Morano, who's Fresnoland's labor and economy reporter, spoke with a couple of farm organizations and farming groups about what this means for labor groups. And what they're saying is people aren't showing up to work. It's been significantly impactful. And they're really concerned about what this could mean for the future of farm labor going
forward. Are these just word of mouth reports of like employers having employees not showing up? Or how do they know that people aren't showing up to work?
Yeah, so the folks that she talked to are Casey Kramer, who runs California Citrus Mutual, which is a large orange citrus co-op. And so they're obviously in contact with a lot of growers. This is the peak citrus picking season.
And the longer it sits on the tree, the less value there is.
Yeah, and something that Juliana learned in the reporting that if you're a farm kid, this is not a surprise to you, although I'm a farm kid, I didn't know this. You can let citrus sit on the trees for a little bit longer, and it's not a huge deal. If it was peaches, if it was grapes, it would be a bigger deal. But for citrus, they can withstand the labor shortages for a little bit. But the California Fresh Fruit Association, Juliana, also spoke to Daniel Hartwick there, and he said, well, they're not picking a lot of the tree fruit at the moment. They are doing pruning, a lot of the off-season work, and that's still, you need to have people show up, and so that's been a big deal for them. It's important to note that while everyone has their backup and is ready for now inaugurated President Trump to escalate the raids, one thing that Daniel Hartwick from the Fresh Fruit Association said is that they didn't see as many raids and impacts to the labor force during the first Trump administration. So while they're definitely watching, they're not, it's very unpredictable right now for a lot of employers. And so they're just trying to figure out what's going on. And of course, on the worker side, fear is at very high levels. And a lot of advocates are really just trying to give people a really clear sense of what their rights are so that they know how to respond if we see more raids in the future.
One thing that I'm going to share this week, it's not a headline, but it's headline to me. I've been following closely the drone situation in New Jersey on TikTok because a lot of major news outlets have been covering it, and it's been a lot of individual people recording things from their backyard, which the veracity of some of these videos is questionable, obviously, but it's an interesting story. And for the first time, we've seen some of these craft or UAPs or whatever you want to call them above Fresno. There's been two different instances where orbs, that's what they're being called, these kind of glowing objects in the sky, have been seen above the city of Fresno. And I think it's interesting in a lot of ways. I don't know what it means necessarily. And one of the things Donald Trump has promised, he's promised a lot of things, but one of the things he's promised is to tell us more about what's been going on in New Jersey. Donnie, what do you think it is?
I have no idea. I honestly have no idea.
Do you think
idea.
It's home hobbyists? Do you think there's a mothership? What's your thoughts? Give us your UFO thoughts.
I don't have UFO thoughts. I've spent zero amount of time thinking about UFOs. Okay. So I'll go with home hobbyists.
Okay, I'm hoping home hobbyists.
Generally not a conspiracy theorist.
Yes. I think it's important for every person to have one lane where they're extremely kooky. Like, I think you need
one. And this
one.
Is your lane?
This is my kooky lane. What else is going on in Fresno this week, Dottie?
So we had three politicians who sit on the Orosi Public Utilities Commission, which is their water district in Orosi, which is a small town in Tulare County. They were refusing to accept the results of the November 5th election, where all three of them lost.
Who? Contesting elections over water boards seems so strange to me.
It was strange. There was an issue with the ballots that some people received in Orosi, and so they were using this as the sort of reason to assert that the election was not a legitimate election.
Gotcha.
However, Tulare County's election office made it very clear that the issue with the ballots that some people received had no way impacted the results of the election.
Got it.
And then finally, Attorney General Bob Bonta had to send a letter to the Orosi Public Utilities District basically saying, please step down.
Or there'll be litigation or something as
Correct.
A result.
Okay. Yeah. So they, as of Friday afternoon, they did step down. But it's an interesting case. I'm sure very few people listening are following what's happening in Orosi. but there's been this long-standing battle with Arosi and East Arosi to consolidate, because East Arosi does not have clean water, has not had clean water for a very long time, and the state's main solution for communities that don't have clean water is to find a nearby water district that does have clean water and tell it to consolidate or swallow up the other district. And Arosi did not want to swallow up East Arosi. So I'm sure that this is part of that struggle, but we're still learning and talking to people. And Diego Vargas on our team will be back in the next week with more information about what's going on.
I love fascinating and strange stories like that.
Me too.
Today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And Greg Rieger did an interesting story this week about when Martin Luther King Jr. visited Fresno. What was the context of him coming to visit the Central Valley?
For those of you who only get your information about Martin Luther King through sanitized quotes on Instagram, you may not realize that he was a firebrand for fair housing and economic integration. And so he came to Fresno in June of 1960 to walk from Fresno High to Fresno City College to really protest a California housing law that would have made it illegal, or sorry, would have made it legal for landlords to discriminate on the basis of race, which was something that a lot of people locally had been fighting for. And so he wanted to stand in solidarity with a lot of Fresnans who had been fighting for fair housing. So that's, a lot of people are commemorating the 61st year of that march today.
Yeah, the more you dig into people's history, the more complex it gets. And they get sanitized over time as people become mythological figures. But Martin Luther King Jr. was a complex figure with complex beliefs about a lot of different things.
Yeah, and MLK Day every year is just always, it's, there's the same proceedings that we have in Fresno every year, and people do the same remembrance. And it's both a really special time, and it's really cool to see this, the unity committee that we have in Fresno, always putting a lot of thought and care into the celebrations we have. And I'm always struck with the way in which the memory of King is not always talked about by elected officials in the way that is talked about by people who are talking about the policies that he was passing. On today's podcast, we are here to talk all things fire and fire risk. We have Jacob Wild, who is a fire captain and PIO with Fresno County Fire Department. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. There's been a lot of risk factors that have been talked about in relation to the LA fires in Southern California, the high Santa Ana winds, denser urban communities right next to fire zones or in fire zones, issues getting water to higher elevations. When all of these things are talked about, is there one thing in particular that stands out for you as a firefighter about what made the risk so high in this case?
And I will say, as having lived in Pasadena, those Santa Ana winds are wild.
Yes,
you don't know them until you feel them.
And the Santa Anas are a big factor. Before these incidents happened down south, we had sent resources down there to pre-position. So the Santa Anas are a big factor. But you also look at the density, the population, how closely the homes are put together. Hillsides that they're on, they're beautiful views, but they're also in a risky area for fires. So a lot of those things are what you look at, and even locally, that's what we look at as well, is, hey, how is this going to affect this community and the homes that are up there? I think those things with the Santa Anas, fortunately for us, we don't quite get the Santa Anas. We see some winds occasionally, but nothing quite like the Santa Anas in the south. So
what does pre-positioning mean? Like, how do you see a wind event and then prevent?
So it's all weather predictions.
Okay.
So based on the weather predictions, we look at the wind speed, the temperature, different factors in the weather patterns. We get those in pre-position, so we will send strike teams. That's five engines and a leader. We'll send those and put them down. Fresno sent one down to San Diego. So everybody throughout the state, we will position resources according to what the weather predictions are for a certain area. So that's staffing up extra equipment, making sure that the local agencies, the local communities still have response from fire personnel, but that we also have something down south for events like that, fires in LA.
Do you think about drought and like general weather conditions when you're thinking about pre-positioning, or is that just kind of the global picture?
A global picture mostly, but yes, current drought, what's the weather been down there in the past couple weeks?
Because I've heard San Diego, it's been the driest it's been in recorded history, basically.
Yeah, and so that's what it goes off. When we're getting our cooler weathers in the evening and in the mornings, the LA area didn't have that. that. They were still, their temperatures were still up in the 70s. So a lot of that goes into relative humidities, how much moisture they have got, so that, or have received this year. So if they haven't received any moisture, then their fire, the red flag warnings or their fire activity could be higher.
Gotcha. Whenever these things happen, people always ask, can it happen here? We had the Creek Fire in 2020.
Right.
We've had smaller fire incidents. What's our risk factor for our area, Fresno County, more broadly?
Yeah, the risk is still anywhere you go up in the foothills. Those are all areas of people want, they have vacation homes, they live up in the area, they want to live up in the mountains, and it's beautiful up there. With that, we have different fuel programs going on. We have LE66s, which that's just basically we come and do inspections of the home. What does the growth of the vegetation around the homes look like?
People have to keep like a certain clear.
Yes, ourreadyforwildfire.org is a great website to go to. That gives you all the information you need to know about living in these areas of a high fire risk. Home hardening, different things with 30 feet away from your house. That needs to be grass and manicured landscape, right? 100 feet of completely mowed and vegetation around your house. And that's just to prevent fires from creeping up to your house and then extending into your home. So those are all things on our readyforwildfire.org website that gives you all the information about that. But yeah, we have those risk factors in our area, right? We're constantly evaluating.
Like the foothill areas, what's the risk factor for them, like Tesoro Viejo or places in the foothills?
So
like
Tesoro Viejo, that's Madera, so it's a little bit different. They do because they're surrounded by SRA, right? And the quickest moving fire is going to come from the grass, the tall vegetation, right? The grass oak woodland, the shrubs, it's going to burn more intense once we start talking about the shrubs and the bushes and stuff like that, but the grass is what moves that fire along quickly, right? So I know that they are surrounded by SRA land, which is that state response area.
What does that mean?
The state response area. Mm-hmm. So the state response area is that's Cal Fire's responsibility. Mm-hmm. So the LRA is local. So that would be like Fresno County Fire or the local government agencies, Clovis, Fresno, all the smaller departments around the valley. But the SRA is state response. And then once you get up into the higher foothills, the higher elevations, now we're talking about the federal land, right? Mm-hmm. Feds are responsible for that. We all have working relationships to where we're sending resources to those incidents to mitigate the incident. So
last year, we saw a couple of grass fires on the valley floor just outside of city limits of Fresno and Clovis, and then also in the San Joaquin River Canyon area. What causes those types of fires, and could those be risky for us?
Those are very risky. I mean, those are risky because they're 2-acre parcels moving quickly through the grass and onto the next parcel with fence lines and all kinds of things that you got to manipulate to get around to figure out where you're going to stop it, right? There's all kinds of factors that go into starting a fire, whether it be a vehicle accident into a telephone pole with lines down, lightning, somebody trying to burn and do the right thing, or mow their lawn. I shouldn't say burning. Burning's probably not the right word for the valley floor. We actually have burning regulations on
Yeah, we can't burn anymore.
No burning on the valley floor. But for that, people mowing their lawns. For mowing their lawns, we always talk about doing it before 10 a.m. 10 a.m. because that's when it starts to get hotter in the valley, and a lot of people mowing the lawn, a rock strike, right? That just starts a little fire that maybe somebody can't contain themselves, or they got to at least call an engine out. And when it gets hotter and drier and we get a little bit of wind on it, it's not something you're going to be able to mitigate yourself. So.
Is it me or you?
I think it's me. Okay. I don't know if you can talk about this, but I've received this question from a lot of people. There's been lots of reports about the number of incarcerated people helping fight the fires. Mm-hmm. And how does their employment, if you will, work? How is it coordinated?
So they are nonviolent, that they have, I don't know the specifics on how they get the option to go to a fire camp. I don't know what that, the details of their incarceration is. But those camps are getting less and less just because of the violent criminals being reduced sentences and time served. But those are camps that we have throughout the state. They are usually coming close to the end of their incarceration, so a year or two left, and they can finish their sentence out at a fire camp. Those crews are super beneficial to us. We started to create more crews with the California National Guard. We have 4 crews in our unit, that supplements the convict crews as well, and then a CCC, California Conservation Corps. We have 7 total crews, I think, between the three.
Wow. I did read an article, I think it was in the LA Times, it interviewed a number of the incarcerated individuals that were fighting fires, and a number of them expressed the desire to continue working in firefighting after they get out. Is that something that happens?
Yeah, that is an option for them. Based on, obviously, their criminal history or what their record holds, some of them are able to get a public safety first aid or even an EMT, and they can continue working in the Cal Fire ranks. And even some of them, I think, are city. I have a couple guys that I went through fire academies with who were the same type of incarcerated on a hand crew like that, and now they're working engineers and captains with Cal Fire. So absolutely.
Wow, that's incredible.
A lot of Cal Fire's budget is for emergency and reactive dimensions, but less than 20% is for preventative measures. Does Cal Fire anticipate more money going to preventative measures in the future?
Cal Fire as a whole, I'm not very informed on their exact budgets, where they're sending money, how they're doing it. But I know that we do put a lot of emphasis on our prevention and even on our risk analysis. We have pre-fire engineers and and fuels crews. They're responsible for essentially doing VMPs, their vegetation management, right? And so they will go and they will pick a area that maybe hasn't burned in a long time or has a lot of dead and down trees. We have crews constantly going up to those locations and brushing and limbing and doing pile burning with the hopes of eventually doing a bigger VMP, 200 acres, right? And those could be in areas that are significant to the county and to the Fresno County area. And so the cost, I couldn't give you an exact number. I couldn't give you all the details on the anticipation of what they're going to do, right? But I know that is a big thing within Cal Fire, is going up and pre-treating these areas of high risk.
I know controlled burns remain controversial. What's Cal Fire's perspective on the use of those?
Yeah, we try to do them. Every unit has control burns that they have planned, and that's a process, right? To get that done, you have to go through the state, you have to go through the counties. There's a lot of certifications that have to get done, a lot of paperwork that has to get land use. You have to go start talking to the property owners to make sure that you can do it on their property, right? And then also, what kind of environmental factors or what kind of environmental things are that going to create? What's the land been before? What has been in the past? So,
do the air quality regulations that we have make it harder to do those types of burns?
Yeah, all burning is done through the air pollution control.
Okay.
So they're the ones who tell us when we can and can't do it. That has to get an approval as well. That's another entity that we have to go through before we do it. Hey, this is when we're planning on doing it. What does it look like? And that's the same thing for burn permits up in the SRA, up at the higher elevations. Anytime you get a burn permit, we do provide burn permits, but that's all done through APCD. So the air pollution control is the one who tells you, yes, it's a burn day, and they approve the burn permit.
I know there's some local Native and Indigenous tribes that have been interested in doing more burning. Do you work in conjunction ever with the tribes on this?
Okay. We do. So that is something that, yeah, that's just a working relationship. They want to get it done, we can do that for them, or they can do it with the assistance. We're always working with local cooperatives. We have a good relationship with Table Mountain. So anytime that those entities want to burn, it's mm-hmm. all in conjunction with us or BLM or the feds.
What's the biggest barrier to doing more prescribed burns like that?
A lot of it is time and resources.
Okay.
The time of it is just, right now we're seeing where we have these fires down in LA. So right. It's hard for us to warrant doing a big burn here in the valley when we have resources committed down south. That's also staffing level, right? The time to burn is not really right now. It was probably about a month or so ago. And with that,
could you explain that?
Just because of the weather patterns.
Okay.
It gets too cold. There's moisture in the fuel. So then it gets hard for them to burn. They're not going to carry. It's not going to consume everything we want it to consume. Mm-hmm. But with that, our staffing levels change throughout the year. So based on the risk and based on the time of year and the weather patterns, we will go into Amador staffing. So that's where we actually close some stations down. Firefighter ones get laid off. They're 9-month seasonals. And so we will keep some stations open for Amador and for the Fresno County Fire. But like right now, we're gonna emergency hire 16 firefighters next week, just based on the incidents going on. It's hard to put on a controlled burn when you have incidents going on in the state. So that's gonna be our first priority.
That makes sense. I know Cal Fire also works with kind of citizen groups like Fire Safe Councils. Mm-hmm. What role do they play in wildfire prevention?
So we work with them. The Fire Safe Councils, they do a lot of their own work. And I went actually to a Fire Safe Council meeting up in the Auber area.
Is that the Eastern Sierra Wildfire Alliance?
I think so.
Okay.
Yes. And so really it's in conjunction with us and the SO and high risk areas. And basically they can come in and do work for those communities. And we can assist with that and also let them know maybe where our projects are so that both projects tie in together. Instead of them putting, hey, we're going to do this over here and we're working completely opposite of them, we work together to try to figure out where the best place to be is to put these control lines in or mitigate future hazards.
So we've been building a lot more locally in virus zones in Clovis, Harlan Ranch, and there's a new planned Shepherd North project that's right next to a virus zone at Shepherd and Temperance. There's all the development by Table Mount in Millerton Newtown, east of Fryant, and then Tesoro Viejo and Madera County that we've already mentioned. There's been some stalled legislation to put more restrictions on building in virus zones, but what's CAL FIRE's perspective on prohibiting building in virus zones?
CAL FIRE's perspective, I don't know specifically. Again, I can't speak to exactly what CAL FIRE's stance on that, right? But for Fresno County, I know that we have a protection and planning, right? So protection and planning works with the County of Fresno. We are not going to tell you can't build a house somewhere, right? That's going to be up to the county. But for us, we go out and make sure that we do inspections. So there's all kinds of regulations on new construction and fire sprinklers in the home. And again, going back to our, you know, these new developments and the LE66 program where we're inspecting these houses to see if they're clear of vegetation, right? We also have that on the valley floor, right? So that's a weed abatement. It's a weed abatement for the valley floor. So
what about water supply issues in these areas? Will that be a factor in the future if there are fires?
So it can be, right? And again, us and the fire department, we are technically not we are not in charge of the water sources. We are not in charge of fire hydrants. That's the county. That is the water districts, right?
But do you tell them what you need in anticipation?
Yes, so that's okay. Part of the inspections that we do that our protection and planning does. They'll go up and say, hey, you need this much of a storage tank for your house. The other part of that is the county. We also offset some of those maybe potential issues. We have water tenders. So on any wildland fire, on any fire in the SRA, even locally on the valley floor and in the state response area, we have water tenders that go, 1 to 2 water tenders, depending on where it's at. We'll even get assistance from Clovis City. So we're bringing water with us to those incidents to try to mitigate if there is a water issue.
It seems, I'm just speculating at this point, but it seems like for Clovis, which is a larger city, they have more infrastructure to potentially deal with water supply issues than smaller communities. Does that play out typically like
that? It can, and it all depends really on the system, right? If I have one engine pulling from one hydrant, it's probably not going to be a huge deal. But once I start putting 15, 20, and they're all pulling from the same system, that's where there's going to be an issue, right? The system may or may not be able to keep up with it. It could, but I know Clovis City and those Fresno City, they have water tenders as well. And then we also can supplement with them. So the Harlan Ranch thing you speak about, that's been a weird area because it's Clovis City,
right?
But across the street, that's considered SRA. That Fryan Current Canal is the line for the SRA land and LRA land and all those things. So it's tricky because it's right there on the border of it, but it's considered Clovis City. So
right.
It's just interesting. I mean, I'm in that same area. I could be where I live is considered, it's not really considered SRA, the state, it's an LRA, but I'm close. I'm at the base of the foothills.
Do city firefighting departments have the same training in terms of wildfire protection?
Yeah.
Is it a different type
Fresno City, they run a lot of structure fires. That's what they do all the time, right? And that's just one of the differences. Their call volume in a certain area is what they do more of, right? They still have grass fires, though. They still have plenty of areas where they can have grass fires. For CAL FIRE and Fresno County Fire, they're just on a bigger scale. It's more grass, right? There's not as many homes in the area. Or there can be less homes, but it's more mountainsides, right, or hillsides. So everybody is trained, every fire department is trained in the same skills and basically disciplines for the fire department.
Okay, so that doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned Harlan Ranch again, and I had talked to someone last week who lives out there who had their insurance company cancel their policy last year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the insurance companies are increasingly going to make these decisions for us about where we can build?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Mine got dropped too. So I'm not 100% sure. That's that as a homeowner. That would be not for the fire department. As a homeowner, though, that would be something that I'd be considering just because if I'm going to build a house, I want it to be insured. I don't know what the insurance, I can't speak to that, obviously, on what the thought is behind that. But yeah, I don't know how that's going to play out. I think there's a lot of people that are dealing with insurances getting dropped and trying to find new providers.
Let's talk about evacuations for a little bit. What's your perspective on how the evacuations went in Los Angeles and Southern California. I know my brother's in kind of the Mar Vista area, and he got one of that unfortunate text that went out to the entire LA County to evacuate, and that was quickly, someone resolved that pretty quickly. But how do evacuation plans work, and how do you coordinate those?
So evacuation plans, those are done through SO. We work, most incidents we go to, almost every incident we go to, we are in unified command with Fresno County Sheriffs. So we will advise them on maybe what, because it's fire, right? So we're going to tell them, hey, this is moving quickly. This probably should be an order. They're the ones that are going to push that out. They're the ones that are ultimately responsible for evacuations. Now, that doesn't mean we're not going to help, right? That means our priority is going to be life first, life, then property, and then environment. So when things like Southern California happen, I wasn't there. I'm not going to speak to the good and bad on what happened, especially when that's their thing, right? It's a still ongoing incident.
What about those people that kind of refused to leave and wanted to protect their properties?
That gets tricky.
Yeah.
That gets tricky. And I can only go back to if that happened. If I'm in a situation here in Fresno County and I'm going up on an engine and somebody doesn't want to leave their house, my priority is going to be that person now, right? Because I want to make sure that I don't leave them behind if something is going to happen to them, right? So now my, like I said, Cal Fire stance is safety first.
Will you remove them from the house if they refuse?
No, we will not. Okay. We will not. That is their property. That is their, they have every right to stay there. We can advise them of the hazards.
So you'll stand by as things
are
happening?
We'll make the notifications. And that's up to the sheriff. Again, that's up to the sheriff. That's up to the police department. If they want to go and remove them, I don't know the process for that. We do advisories. We tell them, hey, this is not safe. Here's why. We can try to convince them all we want to move, right? But at the end of the day, it's your property. So I can't force, we as the fire department cannot forcefully remove you.
Okay. Can I ask you a rumor question? So there's rumors that there's people are hiring their own kind of private fire departments in parts of Southern California. Have you heard about this?
I haven't.
Okay.
I would not be surprised given
where the fires are affecting people.
Yeah, I know for PG&E, right? PG&E has started their own kind of fire protection where they will go. Those guys are responsible for PG&E's infrastructure, right? Yeah, if that's happening, I wouldn't be surprised if there's even insurance companies hiring private companies to come in and do assessments.
PG&E raised our rates, six times last year? So they should have more money to hire.
That's going to pay back all the litigation from
true.
The fires up north.
True. So we've talked a lot about the valley floor, but obviously there's still a ton of risk in the mountain communities from Shaver to Oakhurst. And I'm just curious what we've learned from the Creek Fire about fireproofing communities and how much has been rebuilt in Shaver and the surrounding area.
Yeah, rebuilt, I actually couldn't give you the numbers on
sure.
that. I know that, I mean, if you drive up to Shaver, you can still see, you know, burn scars and stuff. And I know people are rebuilding.
I miss those Cressman's pies.
Right?
Yeah, banana cream.
So that, yeah, there were a lot of lessons learned. I think that even going into that after the fact and seeing it take place in real time, the amount of just vegetation that was around and trees and things that were, those are all fuels that carry the fire. And so that is where we have put a big emphasis on our fuels program and our VMPs and where we're sending people and what is the most a hazard. We had some fuel breaks that actually were very successful in stopping parts of that fire during the Creek Fire. So I think that it's just going back to even evacuations at that point. Getting up and down from Shaver, it's one way. There's the back way of Auberry, but once you start getting people in and out of there and equipment, all those things become hard, right? And all those things become a new task. And so I think that the Creek Fire was a learning experience for sure.
Did you work on the Creek Fire?
I did. I was actually in MMU at the time, Madera Mariposa. And so I was on the Bass Lake side.
Oh, wow.
So I was over there for the majority of that fire.
Wow. What stands out to you as a big memory?
I think just the way that thing was, how active that fire was. And I hate to say it, but when things are burning that intense, really life safety becomes a priority. There just really is not. You can dump as many aircraft resources you want at it, but when it is burning that freely and is burning that quickly, it's a life safety hazard at that point.
So, I remember watching the heights of the flames
on
local TV news and just being astounded, just thinking about what it would be like to fight that.
And a lot of times for us, it's just trying to pick a spot that, hey, where can we stop this thing? Where can we put up a front and try to get it to stop here? So a lot of that time is ridge lines or old projects, old burn scars, and then focusing our efforts on that so that we don't, it doesn't continue to keep going, right?
I know last summer we sent our intern at Fresno Land on a what we thought was a cute little PR stunt. They had goats. Southern California Edison had goats mm-hmm. eating out.
That's happening a lot more now. Yeah, there's a lot of people that, you know, part of our inspections is animals. Do you have grazing animals, right? And so if you do and they're able to graze that field off or they're able to graze those acreages off, that benefits you as the homeowner, right? Yeah, that's becoming more and more. People are, I think that, and I don't know how active it is now, but Cal Fire for a while had a program to where they were using different parts, in different parts of the states, different units were grazing goats, right?
Wildfire goats. Prevention and yoga. Goats mm-hmm. do it all. Yeah, it's incredible. Last question for you. What do you think the average wildland firefighter would want people to know about fire that maybe they don't know?
Oh, let's see. I think it's more intense than you think it is. I think that when we get into these situations of everybody in the mindset is, oh, I can take care of it. It won't affect me. It won't. But once a fire gets going, if you've never been involved in it, you don't know how rapidly things can expand and how quickly they expand. So I think that would be one of the main things is, hey, if there's warnings or there's orders or things like that, it's for your safety. That's really what it boils down to. We don't want people to get hurt. We understand that property means something to everybody, right? My property means something to me, but at the end of the day, my family and the people around me are what matter the most.
So they underestimate the speed.
I think that could be. I do it, right? I do it sometimes. And
you think you can outrun it?
Hey, I'm going to go do this, or I'm going to go perform this tactic, right? Or I'm just going to go over here real quick and do this, and before you're like, I don't have time for that. So we underestimate it a lot. Especially with multiple factors going into fires. And that's just one thing that I think would be that people should recognize, I think, beforehand is this is warnings and what we put out there on our fire, on our Ready for Wildfire. Those are all things that we've seen in the past and that have caught some people by surprise, right? I think that would probably be the main thing that I would stress.
We're going to close this podcast with what we're loving this week. I'll go ahead and start this. If you like watching the NFL, this is the best time of the year.
Yes, it is.
This last weekend was the best weekend. It was epic. Yeah, it's where you move past the wild card round where you got some teams that shouldn't be there and some teams that are too good to be there meeting.
Do you have a favorite upset?
I'm frustrated with the Lions losing.
Yeah. Are you really?
I like that the Commanders won, but at the same time, I just...
What do you think happened? Jacob, tell us. What's your perspective?
I think the Commanders are hot at the right time. That's how the majority of sporting events go. If your team can get on the same page and get hot at the right time, you're unstoppable.
What's your perspective on Goff?
I like golf.
You just can't handle the big moments,
No, I don't think it's you can't handle the big moments. You're getting me down. We're getting in a rabbit hole now. But no, I just think that's playoffs. That's sports. At any moment, it can be anybody's time.
Yeah, so. I enjoyed watching our local guy, Josh Allen, take care of business. He almost lost it there at the end without some drop passes and fumbles. Yeah, that's what I'm loving this week. It's football season.
Can I just say ditto?
Ditto,
no,
okay.
I can't. No, no. I haven't. Okay. No.
Let's touch on college football. About the college football going on tonight. Oh, okay. National championship.
Yeah, go ahead. So that's what you're loving this week?
Yeah, national championship
Notre
tonight.
Dame or Ohio State?
I think I'm going Notre Dame.
Okay.
I think I'm going for Notre Dame. And they've taken a while to get there. So
yeah, when's the last time they've won something? It's probably been a long time.
They haven't been in a league for a while.
Yeah, they've been in their
own
kind of
separate. And now they got into the playoffs. And I'm all for like teams being dominant, but we've seen Ohio State and the Georgias and Alabamas.
Do you think college football is better now that players get paid?
I don't know if it's because they get paid, but I've always liked college sports more than pro sports.
Really?
Yep, always.
How come?
I just think they play it a different way. I don't really know on them getting paid or not now if that's a benefit or not, but if you watch professional baseball, right, MLB playoffs, they always play college baseball. They're always trying to get that one run across. They're moving a guy over. So I just think the playoffs, even NBA football, it all turns into kind of a college sport at that point because they have so many games throughout the year, right? Mm-hmm. That they're playing intense. Football is more intense throughout each week, but I think that once you get to the playoffs, it turns back into a kid's game. It turns back into the college atmosphere.
All right, Donnie, what do you have? You got two guys talking about football. What are you loving this week?
I actually do love the football, although I like it in a different way. It's fine.
Let me ask you this. What's your favorite football snack? If you're going to set out some snacks on
Seven-layer dip.
Seven-layer dip?
Absolutely.
Like cheese, sour cream, beans, all
avocado,
that?
Avocado, that's the right dip.
Jacob, what about you? What's your favorite football snack?
Oh, I'm just a chips and salsa guy.
Chips and salsa?
Yep. Give me some Sal's salsa.
Should I reveal to our listeners like a weird, quirky thing that
yes,
I do?
Yes, you absolutely should. Yes, of course. Why would you bait me like that?
No, you have to.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'm about to share with our audience something that I do that's really quirky. So this weekend I got sick and had to cancel many plans that I had. Very sad. But it meant that my kids and I could finally participate in a Pokemon Go raid.
Oh.
We are secret lovers of Pokemon Go.
Do you just walk around your neighborhood looking for them?
We do most of the time, but yesterday we ended up going to Fig Garden because there's lots of places to play Pokemon Go at Fig Garden Village. Mm-hmm.
There's more Pokemon in Fig Garden than
there
your
are,
neighborhood?
Okay. Actually.
Interesting.
I had to do
Whole Foods or something.
I had to do a run at Whole Foods, and so it was conveniently timed.
I knew it. That's where they are.
Anyways, and so what turned into a really sad, sick weekend ended up being a really excellent Pokemon Go weekend, and we got a Shadow Ho-Oh, which is a very exciting Pokemon.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinan. And our song comes from Stateless Rat.